Rubbish.
He is the member for Port Adelaide and is currently sitting on the opposition benches, but you have been a minister in both the Rudd government and the Gillard government, and you've had Ministry of Mental Health and a number of different ministries, so your experience in the House is certainly getting wide and varied, isn't it?
I've had the privilege of serving in a number of different roles in the last government. The major role I had for the longest period of time was in the health portfolio. For mental health, I was the first, and now the only so far, mental health minister at federal level, because the new government hasn't kept the role on. A very important time where there was a lot of pressure from the community for the Commonwealth government to step in and take more of a role in mental health services. This has traditionally been an area that state governments have had responsibility for, but at the time, back in 2010, when a fellow called Pat McGorry was Australian of the Year at Child Support, Adolescent Psychiatrist, really from Melbourne, there was a lot of community discussion about the lack of adequate quality health services for people with mental illness and other services, not just health services, housing and employment services. And so Julia Gillard, whose dad was a psych nurse, a psychiatric nurse here at Glenside, so she had a good understanding of the mental health system, all of its strengths and more importantly, its weaknesses. So she decided to create a portfolio where someone could spend the time it needed to develop a reform package, which I had the privilege of doing. So that was a really rewarding time for me, and I hope developed a good package that I think is broadly accepted in the mental health sector. I also had the portfolio of ageing, which I absolutely loved. I asked for that portfolio. I'd been involved in aged care services here in Adelaide, going back to the early mid-1990s, and had a real passion for not just aged care, but age-related issues. So
yes.
I really enjoyed that portfolio. I worked with consumer groups, those groups that represent older Australians, but also service providers, aged care unions and such like, to develop a really good aged care package, which I'm glad to say the new government has kept in place and is also implementing. So they were great portfolios. Mm-hmm. When Kevin Rudd came back to the Prime Ministership, he gave me the climate change portfolio, which was a little trickier, and also the environment portfolio, which I have both of those portfolios now under Bill Shorten's leadership as well.
And they are very tricky. They're the naysayers, if you like. I kind of wish we would change the thing from climate change, because my feeling on it is the empirical data is relatively short-lived in terms of the lifetime of this planet, if you like. So, but we know one thing that is for sure, and that is that we are certainly not living as clean as we should, and therefore, whether that's changing the climate or not changing the climate, I'm not about to get into that argument, right, quite frankly. But I know one thing for sure: we are polluting, and we need to stop that.
That's right. I mean, it was an incredibly toxic debate over the last few years in Australia. When people from other countries visit, I think they're quite astounded at the level of angst around this debate. And in many countries, the UK, for example, it's led by a Conservative government. Most of Europe, most of Asia, these debates are pretty much done and dusted, and people are talking about what to do about climate change rather than still talking about whether or not it's happening.
And we're almost, under Abbott, have almost done a complete turn turtle run.
That's right. I mean, he ran an incredibly effective campaign to delegitimise action on climate change. And I think we as a country are still living with that, and I think internationally we're going to live with that at a period, a very important period of time, where there's a lot of pressure for global action being led by the United States and China. Now, that wasn't happening 5 years ago.
So
it all fell apart for us in the lead into the Copenhagen conference. But over the last several months, there's been enormous action by China in particular, largely because of their terrible air quality issues that they're experiencing, which is actually starting to reduce life expectancy in northern China. It's got that bad. But, when China and the US leave things, then there's a much greater likelihood that there will be a global agreement. At the moment, Australia...
in a very large chunk of the global population.
Well, a big chunk of the global population and about half of the global carbon pollution, carbon emissions.
Yeah.
So So these two are the, you know, the big gorillas in the room in the world nowadays. And when they want something to happen, I think it's much more likely it will happen. And we need to grasp in Australia that there are enormous opportunities for us here. The renewable energy industry, I think, is one. When we were in...
I'm on the bandwagon for Alinta and the Port Augusta and the solar generation up there.
Yeah.
The conversion of concentrated solar up there, to me, is just a perfect opportunity to have a flagship right here in South Australia.
Absolutely. Well, last year, when I was the minister in this area, Australia had got to the position of being in the top four most attractive countries, up with the powerhouses of Germany, China and the US. Australia was in the top four most attractive places to invest in renewable energy in the whole world, with billions of dollars were coming to Australia for clean energy projects, and South Australia is the leader in the nation, really is the leader. Over the course of last year, we opened the biggest PV, so photovoltaic solar farm in the Southern Hemisphere, and the biggest wind farm in the Southern Hemisphere. And really the missing piece of the jigsaw for us is the concentrated solar thermal part of the jigsaw, and Port Augusta is such an obvious place to do that. Now, all of that's really been put into a state of uncertainty because of Tony Abbott's views about the renewable energy industry. And we're now in the process, I guess, of working with the government to see if we can get it back on the rails, because there are billions of investment to come in and thousands of jobs, as well as obviously a reduction in carbon pollution.
I remember around the turn of the century, we had aiming to be a solar city. It was a concentrated solar energy plant, Nugent at that point in time, in Wales. The spin-off from the study I saw through ANU and towards politics was that the fresh water generation that they would get out of there would actually supply Wyala, and not only would it supply Wyala, the potential of turning around the Northern Wyala pipeline and servicing everyone up and down that pipeline as well. And that, to me, was such a shocking thing that went away, because whichever way you look at it, soup, heat, steam, condensed into fresh water.
Absolutely.
So,
and we really have struggled to get one of those concentrated solar thermal stations here, and there's still the price of PV solar, which is the listeners would know, the sort of panels you see on people's roofs now. It's come down so much that the big PV solar farms are cheaper now than the solar thermal would be. But you're right, solar thermal has a range of benefits, including the byproduct of clean water. But also, nowadays, you can store electricity out of the solar thermal using molten salt. They're doing it in Las Vegas,
indeed,
for example, where they have enormous resources of sunshine, as we do here in Australia. They produce electricity through the solar thermal, store it for up to 15 hours and use it in the casinos overnight, which is the peak time of electricity demand for Las Vegas. So we really are on the cusp of, or in the middle of a revolution here in the way in which we can generate electricity. And it would be such a pity if Australia squandered the work that we've done over the last decade to get to the point of being a world leader.
I look forward to that, and I'm one who will be sort of on the front lines saying, hey, please keep going, because it's a wonderful technology. Last time I looked out the window, there's lots of sun in Australia, and there's a bit of water flowing around the coast. So
that's right. There are some great tidal projects. One in particular being led out of Fremantle. I mean, the wave energy we have through the Southern Ocean, on the south of Australia, is again some of the best in the world. And we have some great technicians working on ways in which that energy can be harnessed and then put into the grid to create quite a base load, I mean, pretty constant level of electricity generation as well, completely clean.
Mm. It's a wonderful thing. We probably need to deal with the elephant in the room, and that is the fact that sitting on the banks of the Port River is ASC, and the submarine contract. It seems to be, whilst nothing seems to be concrete about it at this stage, the process, the way it's being spoken about in Canberra almost is almost fait accompli. I don't know that it actually is, but South Australia needs the submarine project right here at the ASC. Really. How do we make sure that A, the process probably improves a little bit better to what we're seeing at the moment? We've had Germany come out in the last 48 hours. will actually assemble right here at the ASC. So it's a huge part of your electorate, the people in your electorate. How do we actually bring the government to account on this, I guess, is probably the question.
Well, public pressure, and a bit more public pressure. That's really what led the Liberal Party when they were in opposition to the point early last year, still in opposition, when they came down to Port Adelaide and committed the 12 submarines, the next generation of submarines for Australia, would be built in Port Adelaide. Mm. It was a crystal clear, unambiguous commitment that was made before the election. And it's become equally clear over the last few months that the government was preparing to walk away from that and do a deal with Japan for Japan to build those subs and send them over here. Now, there'd be some work in Port Adelaide in a project like that, but it would be very different and much smaller and qualitatively very different work gluing the things together effectively. I'm not a technician, but it's effectively gluing the things together. And the sort of public pressure we've seen from very senior ex-Navy people, a whole range of other countries around the world.
Well, even Japanese senior military advisors are coming out and saying,
why would you buy our submarine? You know?
Well, because if you buy our submarines, we're not going to tell you anything about them.
No.
The Japanese are saying that the intellectual property in their submarines is not something they'd be willing to share with Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Not picking on Australia, with anybody, as you say. So I'm a little bit heartened by the pressure that's starting to come on. There were Senate hearings this week here in Adelaide, and they're starting to see Liberal senators break ranks with their government.
At least half of the Senate, certainly the Liberal senators in South Australia, have come out today. We're going to back submarines being built at that point, aren't
we? That's right. But on the other hand, David Johnston, the Defence Minister, is in Japan today talking to his counterparts about this project, amongst other things. So I feel better than I did about this 4 or 6 weeks ago, I have to say. I mean, I think the sense I was getting back then was that this was a done deal. And Tony Abbott was effectively just working the press conference out with the Japanese Prime Minister when he is here in Australia for the G20 meeting next month. I'm getting more of a sense now that the pressure is starting to build on the government, but we can't be complacent. We need to continue to build that pressure. Jay, the Premier here, is building that pressure very strongly because we know that the hub of skills that you get down at Tech Port, down on the peninsula, is incredibly important, not just for the people who work there, but the spin-off, the ripple effect through the South Australian economy, the same way the car industry operated for the last several decades, is very important for our future.
Look, I'm a manufacturing general in this country. Whether it's being affected by free trade agreements being written with China, Japan, and our Asian partners, this kind of sweethearting, it's a little concerning from my perspective, in as much as, hey, really, this country needs, from a national security point of view, and okay, well, now let's go to defence, that's national security, but jobs is also national security. We seem to be threatening that part of the manufacturing sector in this country. It's in all sorts of trouble as we shift to importing. Now, balance of trade is going to be affected by that. Next thing, we'll have the Reserve Bank going up and down at this and wanting to shift interest rates and what have you. So, you know, the whole, and we've lived off the back of mining for some time to keep that balance of trade in order. Well, mining, you know, China itself has come out now with a tariff on our coal.
As for South Korea, a few months ago, the third biggest export market for our coal as well. So
CSA Wheels, you know, we export tariff, or we import tariff-free from South Korea. The wheels that we send into South Korea are tariff, very heavily hit with tariff. Fortunately, the dollar's coming back to probably where it should be, in the sort of 90-85 to 95-cent type range, which is making our exports more competitive.
More competitive, and the dollar's been a very serious problem for us. It's just been so stubbornly stuck above 100 US cents. But look, you're right. This is a very challenging time for traditional manufacturing because of the level of competition that is now around in the world, the entry particularly of China into effectively the world. market 10 or 15
we
years
talk
ago.
About
the dynamic just changed.
We talk about the solar industry, and we talk about, you know, when you consider the panels used to be made in Germany, they don't make them anymore because they couldn't compete. But the heavy subsidisation of PV in China has basically captured it for the Chinese government. Now, they're going through a process at the moment, and they're going around and saying, no, we can't have all these companies, we can't afford you anymore. So they're now rationalising their own support of the industry now. So we're being affected by these massive economies overseas. And here we are really a minnow at the end of the day.
And this is a mixed blessing for us. I mean, the entry of China into the PV solar manufacturing market, for example, massively drove down the cost. And what that's done is allowed hundreds of thousands of Australian households to put solar panels on their roofs who may not have been able to afford it. When we came to government, 7,000 houses had solar panels across the whole of Australia when we came to government. There's now 1.3 million.
5 kilowatt systems
were
$15,000 and then they dropped down to about $5,000.
That's right. So there are benefits for Australian consumers from this, but we need to make sure that there is a level playing field, a fair playing field. So there's a great solar panel manufacturing business out of Mawson Lakes. I think it's still the only one in Australia today.
Yeah.
And it currently has a case against Chinese solar importers that they're effectively dumping solar panels in the Australian market. This is a case that's been taken in America and in Europe against Chinese solar manufacturers, that they're selling those panels in Australia for less than they cost to make. And so that's got to go through the court process. But you know, these sorts of mechanisms to ensure that we can compete on a fair playing field, maybe we won't pay the same wages they do in China or India, but that otherwise there is a fair playing field, is really important for governments in the day to day time.
You brought them up. The technology that's being displayed by that particular company that they're building out there is amazing, and of the highest quality.
Very high quality, and there are still European manufacturers who make panels, and they're significantly more expensive than the Chinese panels, but they probably last longer, they're higher quality and so on and so forth. And Tindo is in that market, and what Tindo really needs is, I think, scale.
Yes.
And it's got some great ideas about how they get their panels out, but it's difficult for them to fight with one hand behind their own back if importers were able to dump panels in the Australian market.
But it seems they're doing a lot of work with our seven states under the Tasman there, so
that's right. But this is a great example of the way in which Australian industry can capture opportunities from the clean energy market. There's a manufacturing plant in Salisbury that only opened over the course of the last 12 months, opened by a company that's been operating in Victoria for 150 years in the appliances market, and more recently the car components industry, and it decided to build the solar frames, which are going to underpin the 2 million solar panels that will be at this big solar farm I talked about earlier, the biggest solar farm in the southern hemisphere, being built as we speak in New South Wales. So 2 million frames, or frames for 2 million panels, being built by Australian workers in Salisbury using Australian steel.
And understanding Australian conditions.
Absolutely, using Australian steel. So these are great stories, and that's why we need to keep a strong underpinning of the renewable energy market.
Absolutely. We're going to take a little break and we'll come back and wind up with you this morning. We do thank you for your time.